It's time for Steve Gallimore Live. For the next hour, we'll examine the world around us through news, science, and philosophy. Then we'll open up God's Word to put it all into perspective. Now here's your host, Steve Gallimore.
Great to be with you today. We are winding down the week with, I think, a truly incredible program. This is one that you are going to enjoy. You need to stay with us because we have a program that you will find very beneficial in your life, and also you will find it beneficial as you look out at the world around you. We are talking today about Christians and mental illness. Is it a problem? How big of a problem is it? And what can we do about it? How should Christians relate to the issue of mental health care and mental illness? So we're going to talk about all of those things. I have a psychiatrist here in the studio with me, and he is here so that he can share information with all of us. He's not here in the studio to take a look at me in particular today, I don't believe. Tim, it's great to have you with us. We'll introduce him in just a moment. But we've had him here before. He's a great psychiatrist and one, I think, that can help us so well with the topic that we have at hand today. So stay tuned. Christians and mental health. What do we do about it? How do we relate to it? Now, I would remind you that you can go to our website, www.lifetalk.net, and there you can find all the ways that you can get LifeTalk programming, the satellite, the radio stations, the cell phone casting, the vodcasting, podcasting, and all the radio streams. We have several radio streams there that are available to you. So lots of ways that you can get LifeTalk programming. Go there and check it out. And I would ask you again to be a missionary and to share that information with your friends. Because if there is not a LifeTalk station in their area, they can still get LifeTalk programming. In fact, they can get live radio feed by satellite, etc., as I just mentioned. They can get that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, as well as downloading specific programs that they would like to have and keep and listen to later. www.lifetalk.net. Now, we would love to hear from you as well today, so let me give you our telephone number. It is 800-775-4673. 800-775 and the word HOPE, H-O-P-E. We are always very happy when you call in, and I know today's program is one of those kinds of programs that can be so beneficial and helpful to you. And you may have questions. Feel free to call in with those questions. If you know someone that has mental health issues, if you have mental health issues, if you would like some answers of where to seek help or some other points that you would like to have answered, feel free to give us a call, 800-775-4673. Now, according to a recent article released in the Baltimore Sun newspaper, there's a story coming from there that a medical group, a medical company, has just released a new test where a person can do an in-home test. It has to be sent off to a lab, but they can do an in-home test to test for genetic issues relating to mental illness for those in particular that are susceptible to schizophrenia. Now, some scientists, of course, greet this new type of technology and say this is a great thing. Others have concern and reservations about the impression that many people will have when they start looking more at their genes and their predispositions, whether or not they are doomed from the womb. To use one quotation that I read recently, doomed from the womb. Are people going to look at these things and say, well, I have the predisposition for it. Am I therefore doomed? Is this going to actually happen to me? And what can I do about it anyway? Well, we're going to talk about some of those things today also. So stay tuned with us, and we'll get to that in just a minute. Johns Hopkins University psychiatrist, Dr. Raymond DiPaolo Jr., has said that you can't separate these two things. It's not nature and nurture, or nature versus nurture, but he says it is nature and nurture. The two go together. And that's another issue that we're going to talk about today, the issue of nature and nurture as it relates to mental wellness, mental health. So we have a lot to talk about in these areas. Genes, of course, as all of you know, tell our bodies how to develop. Those are the things that get turned on, and they say do this and do that, and that's the way the body actually ends up developing. Well, some genes have been tied to a predisposition or actually tied to these diseases: schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, anorexia nervosa, and cocaine addiction as well. So we have, as I mentioned just a moment ago, a lot of things to talk about. We're going to talk about that issue also. While a genetic test may indicate a predisposition to a certain thing, it doesn't necessarily mean that a person is going to end up that way. However, according to one survey that was recently done in Canada, one-fourth of people that have had this type of genetic testing done and discover that they have predispositions, those people do not have children. One-fourth of them choose not to have children because they're afraid that it will get passed along to their children. Another issue related to this whole thing of new technology and our ability now to look at our genes and to say, well, this may happen to us because we are predisposed. Well, genetic studies have helped to lessen some of the stigma as well of those that have mental illness. For instance, when a psychiatrist nurse, Karen Mann, was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, she remembered that her grandmother had the disorder as well. And then, this is a quote, she says, "I knew there was a genetic link." But she says she remembered thinking there that there was a stigma and I don't want it. But reports that cutting-edge research is untangling the roots of psychiatric disorders, of course, are helping to lessen some of those fears. Now, while psychiatrists have no cure, and our guest today, of course, will be well-qualified to maybe give more definition to that, but while there is no cure for mental illness, research, of course, is enabling this whole field to be transformed in the way that we look at things and possibly lead, maybe, to some abilities to bring about some cures. According to the physician that I just quoted a moment ago, Dr. DiPaolo, he says that the next big news story that is going to break is about the brain. We are on the verge, apparently, according to his analysis, of having a tremendous news story about brain and how the brain functions and how it can be treated. As Christians, of course, Christians have for years had some uneasiness with psychiatry. We also have the issues in the Bible about demon possession and how does that relate to mental illness. We're going to talk about all of these issues today. So stay tuned, stay with us. There's a lot more to come. If you'd like to call, 800-775-HOPE.
Call 800-775-4673 to share your thoughts on Steve Gallimore Live.
And now, let's welcome back from vacation the Comedy Corner's favorite financial funny man, Woody Nichols.
Thank you, thank you. It's great to be back. Went to visit a friend out west. He told me I look like $1 million. I said, "Do you really think so?" He said, "Sure. You're kind of green and wrinkled." I want to tell you, a vacation can sure put you in the pink. Of course, in my case, it put me in the red. I would have been back a little sooner, but I had trouble with car sickness. Yeah, I get it every month when the payment comes due. But I guess I'm just paying for my mistakes. Everybody does that. Even Congress. Of course, they do it with our money.
If your finances aren't exactly a laughing matter, go online for the free guide to family budgeting. Just visit crown.org.
You know what a taxpayer is, don't you? Somebody who works for the government but gets no vacation, no holidays, and no sick leave.
A Money Minute from Crown Financial Ministries.
Steve Gallimore back with you. We are talking today about Christianity. We're talking about mental illness, how those things do go together. What actually is the root cause of mental illness? Is there just one? Are there many causes for it? And how should we relate to this whole topic as Christians? I have a great Christian psychiatrist in the studio with me today that is going to help answer all these questions for us. Any question that you have, our phone lines are open. We are live and on the air with you. So if you have a question that you would like to ask about mental illness, how Christians should relate to this topic, or anything that you have about yourself personally or someone that you are relating to, feel free to give us a call. The number is 800-775-4673, 800-775, and the word HOPE, H-O-P-E. My guest today is Dr. Tim Jennings. He is a psychiatrist, and he is in the studio with me today. He does more things than just practice. He also is out on the lecture tour, and I know that he gives lectures in many places. He is currently developing a new concept for the Christian community of helping people better understand the mind and how to relate to mental health issues. Well, It is such a great privilege to have you with me again today.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
This is a wonderful topic. We've talked about some specific issues before when we've been here together, but today we're looking more at the broad issue of psychiatry, mental health, especially how that relates to Christianity. Let's start, first of all, just with kind of an overview, news overview, of where mental health is going. Now, I just gave a quotation before the break of this physician at Johns Hopkins University saying that the next big news story is going to be about the brain. But bring us up to date, if you would, a little bit on some of the things that are happening and how your field of endeavor is actually changing.
Well, as the research goes on, we're discovering more and more of the genetic and biologic links to various mental illnesses and how our own experiences, what we do, the environmental actions that we take, actually impact on gene expression and brain function. For instance, there is a protein that's been discovered that's essential for good brain health. It's called brain-derived neurotrophic factor. This protein is like fertilizer for your neurons. When it's available in the brain, the neurons that you have, the brain cells that you have, are very healthy, and they'll branch out and connect faster and easier, and you can learn more quickly. When this and your brain will actually make new neurons under the impact of this protein. When this protein is unavailable, the brain doesn't make new neurons, and the neurons you have begin to wither and die, and you start losing neurons. Now, high unremitting stress states where people are constantly under pressure, anxiety, worry, and aren't managing that stress well actually has been shown to turn off the gene that produces this protein. Now, I can go into the genetics, how that happens, and maybe I will in a moment, but let's take through the cascade of events. When the protein is turned off, the neurons begin to wither and die, and people develop a condition called depression. We've done scans of the brain and show that there's an area of the brain called the hippocampus that when people are depressed, that area of the brain is shrinking. And it's shrinking because neurons are being lost and out of the brain. When we treat people with medications, the medications result in not only depression clearing, but the neurons in that part of the brain start being produced again and the volumes there increase again. Now, we've shown in animal models what happens when somebody's depressed. I don't know if you remember much about your genetics, but DNA is a double helix of genetic code that has to unzip like a zipper. And when it unzips like a zipper, it sends the messenger RNA can form a code along that unzipped zipper in order to make proteins. Right. If it doesn't unzip, it can't make proteins. What happens when people are depressed is that methyl units, little units, come in and lock the DNA so it can't unzip. Antidepressants come along and add an acetyl unit on there, which cancels out the methyl unit, basically, so the DNA can unzip again, and you can start making these proteins again. And so people have this idea that mental illness is something caused by some demonic force or something coming over somebody, and there's not some physical connection going on in the brain, really, I think, are living somewhat in the dark ages themselves.
So as science has progressed, we have a better opportunity now, probably than ever before, to understand the brain, what makes it work, and just the opening up the genetic code, of course, is going to help not only in mental illness, but in many other types of illnesses. Where do you see this going? Do you see a time when because of studies with the genes, that we'll be able to really start identifying carefully what kinds of mental illnesses people maybe are predisposed to, but actually may end up with?
I don't know about the end up with on most cases. There are certain things like Huntington's chorea. We know those types of disorders are very much, you've got the genetic materials and you're going to get the disease. But things like schizophrenia, even with identical twins in which one twin has schizophrenia, the other one has the exact same genetic material, it's not 100% of the co-twin there gets schizophrenia. So there's environmental interactions that have to impact upon the genetic material in order for the disease to present. So just because you have the genes doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get the disorder.
Now, let me ask you this. This is a very broad question. I know there's probably not an answer for it, but certainly not a simple answer. What causes mental illness?
Well, when we think about mental illness, we're talking about dysfunctioning of the mind, and the mind is a combination of both. In our society today, we can understand very easily hardware and software. Hardware is the brain tissue itself, like your hardware on your computer, the physical components you can touch. And software is all the uploaded material that goes in. For instance, you and I have an English software package that was uploaded into our hardware, our brain, after we were born. Our beliefs in God, how we learn to relate to other people, the constructs and how we see the universe. All these things were uploaded. That's software. Now, mental illness is a dysfunction in brain function or mind function, then it could be due to hardware problems, like your computer's hardware problems, or it could be due to software problems, or both. And the challenge is, of course, to try to identify in an individual patient, is this a hardware issue where the hardware itself is dysfunctional from de novo? Is it a software issue, or is it a combination of both? And the beautiful thing about the way God has made our minds, our brains, is that the choices we make actually react upon ourselves to cause alteration in the hardware development. We can change the neural circuitry by the experiences we add to our lives.
Now, well, I hear the music playing. We have to go to break, and I'd like to pick up on that when we get back. And I know that you have a lot more to say about that as well. So stay tuned. Stay with us. We will be back in just a minute. Our number is 800-775-4673. We would really like to hear from you, your questions, and also your opinions. Your ideas are important to us. What do you think about the whole issue of mental health and psychiatry? Give us a call, 800-775-HOPE.
Call now with your questions or comments, 800-775-4673. Have you ever wished that God would send you an email telling you what He expects from you? Have you ever wondered what your purpose is in life? Did you know that God designed you for a one-of-a-kind assignment?
Max Lucado's new book, Cure for the Common Life, will help you discover how your ability unveils your destiny and how to find your uncommon call to an uncommon life. Call with your tax-deductible donation of any amount, 800-775-4673, and we'll be happy to send you a hard copy of Cure for the Common Life by Max Lucado. That's 800-775-4673. 800-775-4673. That's 800-775-HOPE.
Steve Gallimore back with you. We are talking today about mental illness. We are talking about mental illness and Christianity. How do the two go together in their understanding or in our understanding of them? And we would like to hear from you, 800-775-4673. If you are struggling with some type of mental issue, whether it's depression or something more severe than that, give us a call. We'd love to be able to be helpful to you today. In addition to that, if you have a question just of dealing with someone that has mental illness, or if you'd like some advice of where to go to get some help, if you have a general question about Christian theology as it relates to mental health issues, we would like to hear from you. As I mentioned earlier in the program, I know that many Christians over the years have had an uneasiness with the issue of psychiatry and mental health, and we're going to discuss some of those things. But if you have questions or input on that, feel free to give us a call, 800-775-4673. My guest today is a psychiatrist. He is Dr. Tim Jennings, and he has been here in the studio with me before, and we are just having a great discussion as we're getting started in this whole issue that we're talking about today. Once again, give us a call. We'd like to talk with you and have you as part of the program, 800-775-4673. Well, Dr. Jennings, let's come back where we left off. I had asked you a question before break about what causes mental illness, and you were going back and giving us some background in that. I'd like for you to finish that up, if you would.
Well, I also wanted to just kind of add to it the fact that I have some Christian patients that struggle with the idea of mental illness. And I point out to them, they say things like, well, if I had more faith, I wouldn't have this. And this must be a result of my broken relation with God in some way. And I ask, when mankind fell from grace into sin, defects began entering the human gene pool. We live in a defective physical body now, and that includes the physical structure of our brains. They are not perfect as God made Adam's brain. And so defects enter our experience, and thus diseases of all kinds have entered, including diseases of the actual brain tissue itself. And so people need to allow for the reality that in the humanity we live in, there are going to be defects of mental functioning as well as physical functioning. The issue that I see that's most important, you made a comment there a while ago in the opening statement about doom from the womb. And if somebody gets a genetic test and this test shows they have genes that make them vulnerable to this, are they doomed? I don't see doom as an illness. What I see doom as is being outside of grace of God, not knowing God, not knowing having His working in your life, which is an issue of character, not an issue of mental illness. Because you can have schizophrenia, yet have good character. You can be an honest schizophrenic. You can be a loyal and faithful schizophrenic, you see?
Right.
Whereas somebody without schizophrenia could be dishonest and deceitful and so forth. So the real issue for our eternal doom is not whether we have a mental illness. It's the issue of our character.
Right. Good point. Now, there are several causes that can lead a person to find themselves with mental illness, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
What are some of those causes?
Well, obviously, we talked about one. Let's run through them real quick. Genetics, and examples of that would be somebody with Down syndrome, attention deficit disorder, schizophrenia. All these have genetic vulnerabilities that you can tie back to specific genes or chromosomes that aren't doing what they're supposed to do, and thus we have this defect in the hardware of the brain.
So when their genetic code is put together at conception, some of the pieces aren't quite right. They're not perfect.
That's correct.
And probably none of us, there's not one person that ever comes in the world that has a perfect set of genes.
That's correct.
But everyone's is a little different than everyone else's.
Right.
And some end up with these issues built into their genetic code that actually ends up causing or predisposing them to mental illness.
Correct. So genetics. Environmental stressors acting on genetic vulnerability. For instance, Alzheimer's dementia. Alzheimer's dementia, you have to have certain vulnerabilities, but then you also have to have oxidative stress, stress that oxidizes or causes damage to the brain slowly over the course of decades before you actually see the illness coming on.
Which brings up the point, just to interrupt your flow for just a moment, to reference back to what you said earlier. There are some Christians that feel, as you have indicated, that maybe mental illness is because they don't have enough faith and these kinds of things. But a person that has Alzheimer's, can anyone conscientiously say to that person, you have Alzheimer's because you don't have enough faith in God?
Obviously, that's a ridiculous notion.
Right.
Yeah, that's a great point.
It doesn't mean that person can't go to God for healing. But if God doesn't choose to heal them and they have Alzheimer's, it doesn't mean that they have a lack of faith.
Correct. Beautiful point. Other factors, toxins, alcohol, drugs, heavy metals like mercury or lead, and we've all heard the stories of the kids eating lead-based paints and so forth and having mental problems related to that. Infections, encephalitis, HIV dementia, mad cow disease, these types of infections. Again, the person that gets one of these, is it because they don't have enough faith? Trauma, and this could be emotional trauma, the trauma of childhood abuse trauma, or it could be physical trauma where you were in a car accident, your head bashed into the window, and you had actual physical trauma. So either emotional trauma that results in software changes,
mm-hmm.
or physical trauma results in hardware changes, either one,
right.
can cause the damage. Relationship dysfunction and loss, a marital discord that's severe, domination by a partner in a marriage can result in one surrendering their self-governance to another, which resulting in depression and anxiety. Loss, as in a death of a loved one, results in unresolved bereavement that can go into a depressive state. Flawed belief systems, that we believe things that are untrue, and those beliefs cause us to have undue worry or anxiety or superstitions or things like that. And then finally, self-surrender to another sentient being, sometimes called demon possession.
All right.
Okay. And the problem with many Christians is, I listed 8 different possible causes, is that some good, well-meaning people want to attribute all of the causes to a self-surrender to another sentient being, sometimes called demon possession.
All right. So we need to look at all of those things, or you, in your practice, you look at all of those things. When someone comes to you, they need help. And you look at all the causes and try to evaluate exactly what's going on. Let me ask you this, just so that all our listeners know and understand, because I doubt that it's clear to them or probably anyone else in the world. Well, there the music goes. But when we come back, I'd like to know just briefly some categories of mental illness and maybe some differences without going into the classroom type of situation, but just try to help us understand in a broad way what we're looking at when we're talking about that.
Okay.
We will be back in just a minute. Stay with us. Our number is 800-775-4673. If you'd like to give us a call, feel free to do so. Be happy to talk with you. 800-775-HOPE. Steve Gallimore back with you. We are talking today about mental illness. We are talking about Christians and how we relate to the whole issue of mental health. And I have a great guest with me today, and he is Dr. Tim Jennings. And we are talking about the whole perspective of mental health issues and the whole perspective of Christian theology, how it all goes together. And if we can be helpful to you today, not just talk about the Bible issues, which we, of course, want to do and are doing, but also if we can be helpful to you, please give us a call, 800-775-4673. Right now, we're going to the phones, and we are going to Minnesota and talk to Nadine. Nadine, nice to have you with us today.
Thank you. I just caught what you were talking about, and I'm going through something that's similar. I'm a Christian, and it seems like life stresses have gotten to me too much, so I'm going to be seeing counseling, but there aren't any Christian counselors that are going to be in my area. What do you suggest on how I should be able to take that along with the spiritual aspect of it?
Well, I think that's a valid question. When you're trying to find someone that can be helpful to them, you want to make certain that they're not going to undermine your values as a Christian. I think that's an important issue. But let me ask our guest today, Dr. Jennings, how would you respond to Nadine?
Well, one of the things I tell even my own patients that when you go to a counselor, it doesn't mean that you leave your own reason and judgment at the door. You take your own brain, your own reason and judgment into the room. You present the issues that you're struggled with, and you hear the feedback, the counsel, the direction, the wisdom of the counselor you're going to. But then you're required to process that through for yourself. Think it through. Analyze it. Consider it. Weigh it with your experience. Look at the evidence for the feedback you're getting and come to your own conclusion. Accept those things which are reasonable and healthy and reject those things which are not. And if the counselor believes that you are not seeing eye to eye on something, then they have the responsibility to be able to explain it to you in such a way that you can comprehend what they're trying to teach you. I advocate that people be very leery of those who would want you to suspend your own thinking and turn your mind over to them to control in some way. I don't advocate that type of approach because I find that Christ said in John 8:32, you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. So it's important that you come reason these things out for yourself, comprehend, gain insight, and then make those intelligent choices which will be beneficial to moving your life in a healthy direction.
Nadine, does that answer your question, or...?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Is there anything else that we can be helpful with today?
I just kind of wonder, they talk about a chemical imbalance that the counselor feels that I have, and they want to adjust medication that I have. Do you have any idea how long that takes with counseling?
It depends on the reason that you're getting medication. Some people have disorders that require lifelong medication. You might consider it like somebody who has a high blood pressure. If they take their blood pressure medicine, their pressure stays well. If they come off their pressure medicine, then their pressures go back up. Some disorders require lifelong medication. There are other disorders, however, that if you do engage in the psychotherapy aspect of it and fix the software issues that are contributing to the dysfunction, that you can come off of medication. So it really just depends on the disorder that was being treated and what the underlying reasons for the presentation and the problems are.
At this point, they're saying that I have severe depression and severe anxiety. And I also have physical problems, too, fibromyalgia. And so I'm dealing with a couple of other issues besides the emotional aspects of it. And so I can't work now. And so I'm wondering how long that might take, or is it even possible to become healthy enough to be able to go back to work?
Yeah, in every individual situation is different. There are certainly patients that I've had that have recovered enough to be able to go back to work, but not be able to go back to work without medication when they have disorders that you describe. Most of them are on some type of medication to help assist the functioning of the body, the functioning of the biology. So, in your case, you'll have to work with your local physician and local counselor to assess the severity of your disorder and how well you're progressing in treatment and get their input, which would be much more accurate in your case than what I could give you.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
All right, thanks so much for calling, Nadine.
Thank you.
All right, God bless.
God bless you too.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye. Let me ask you, just following up on Nadine's call, if we can do that. When we talk about people remaining on medication, you use the analysis of high blood pressure. We know in the case of high blood pressure that with certain lifestyle changes, a person can come to the place where their body resets itself in some way, and they're able to live without that, as long as they do it in the proper way, the proper medical care, and the proper lifestyle changes. Is there a further analogy with mental health issues? You talked before about how that there can be a breakdown, but maybe a recovery. When it comes to some of the mental health issues, are there things that people actually can do together with help maybe from others to regain where they were before?
First, I want to mention that not all people with high blood pressure can make lifestyle changes to have their blood pressure
controlled. All right.
But many can. Many can. Yes, I mentioned earlier in the show a protein that's healthy for the brain called brain-derived neurotrophic factor that we all want to have in our brain because it makes the brain so healthy. And yes, there are things you can do. Regular aerobic exercise actually causes this gene to stay turned on and this protein to be produced, and good stress management. So a good, healthy spiritual life where stressors are being modulated and handled well keeps the corticosteroids low, keeps the brain-derived neurotrophic factor turned on. So that is good and healthy for the brain. Good nutrition. We need certain vitamins and nutrients in the diet. B vitamins are very important. Omega-3 fatty acids in the diet are extremely important for neuronal health. The actual membranes of each individual brain cell are made up of omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids. And if you don't get omega-3s in the food you eat, then the neuronal membrane integrity is altered, and it has been shown to increase the risk of various mental illness like bipolar disorder and major depression. So there are things like that, diet, exercise, good spiritual life, that can actually have a positive impact on the physical functioning of the body and thus the brain. Yes.
All right, let's come back to where we were before break. And something that I had posed to you, if you would give us kind of a general categorization of mental illness. I know it's easy to talk about it just all as one lump issue, mental illness, but there are some categories, aren't there?
Yes, they're broken down into some general categories, the psychotic disorders. And psychotic disorders are disorders in which people lose touch with reality. Mood disorders are disorders in which they have alteration in their mood states. Anxiety disorders is where they have alteration in the way they interact, or the anxiety experiences they have, worry too much and so forth.
More in just a moment. Stay with us. And once again, if you'd like to give us a call, 800-775-4673. 800-775-HOPE. We'd love to hear from you.
Your thoughts and comments are welcome at 800-775-4673.
If you're blessed by what you're hearing on this radio station and you want more, Life Talk Radio introduces the Hope Channel, a powerful new television network with an exciting, inspirational program lineup relevant to today's culture. Join us in a new documentary series as we retrace Paul's epic journeys across Asia Minor. Enjoy biographies that will take you through the lives of great Christian leaders. Inspirational Bible studies will lead you to a better understanding of God's Word. And our cutting-edge health and cooking programs will help you enjoy a full and happy lifestyle. To start enjoying Hope Channel's programming right away, contact your cable or satellite provider today and let them know you want the Hope Channel. For more information, visit us online at www.hopetv.org. That's www.hopetv.org.
Steve Gallimore back with you. We are talking about Christians and mental health today. If you have mental health issues you'd like to talk with us about, feel free to give us a call. I have a great guest, Dr. Tim Jennings, who is a psychiatrist. He is here in the studio with me, and we are happy to take your call. If you would like some advice or some help, feel free to dial the number, 800-775-4673. If you have questions about the broader principles of mental health, especially as mental health treatment relates to the message of Christianity, we'd be happy to discuss those issues with you as well. 800-775-4673. Tim, let's go back to maybe some root causes of mental illness. As you know and I know, and probably many of our listeners understand, is that we have the process and the problem of sin in the world that has really distorted everything that we see. You know, when the Bible says that God has prepared a new place for us, a new earth, and it says that eye has not seen or ear heard, neither has even entered into our heart the things that God has prepared for those that love Him. Now, I think all of us can imagine fantastic palaces and, you know, all of these kinds of things. That's not too hard to do. But to imagine a world without sin, how do we relate to that? And we see it all around us. The other day, I mean, this is a little grotesque, but just a couple of days ago, I had to pick a tick off my dog. And I thought, hey, that's part of the process of sin. And how would, I mean, what about a perfect world? What would it be like there? And so I think as Christians, we are always forced to go back and say, how did God intend things to be? And what are they like today in contrast with the way that he had actually designed things to be in the beginning when everything was created perfect?
Yeah, my understanding is that God is love. And love is that principle of other-centeredness, that principle of giving for another. The greater love is no man that he would lay his life down for a friend, which basically says, I love you so much that I would do anything for your welfare, including, if necessary, give my life for you. Which is at war now with this principle of sin, which actually is more modern language called survival of the fittest, which says, I love myself so much that I would do anything, including kill you, that I might live. And you see these two antagonistic principles at war on this planet, and thus we don't see a vegetarian hawk, okay?
Right.
We see a hawk that kills, because he's going to survive the survival of the fittest. And this principle is a destructive principle, and you look in relationships how people deal with each other. When they are looking out for themselves, to take advantage of the person, to get their own needs met, rather than seeking the welfare and the benefit of the other. The principle of love brings life, brings healing, brings happiness, brings joy. The principle of survival of the fittest brings pain, brings destruction, brings damage, and brings death. And you can see this contrasted all over nature in human relationships. And so if you ask about the origin is we were designed to be givers. And when Christ talks about, drink from me the water of life and it will well up within you to flow out to many. Okay,
right.
And that that love from God that we are to ingest is to flow out from us to others. And that would bring us true happiness and health. And the point that we're talking about today is you can have this love in your life and you can love others even if you have a history of depression. Look at David in the Bible. He struggled with it. Okay, you can have this even if you have bipolar disorder, even if you have schizophrenia, even if you have Down syndrome. Look how loving those kids are. Okay, so even if you have some of these problems that cause you to struggle with mental illness, you can still experience love and love others.
Well, and I would like for us to explore that more. Let's go to the phone lines now. There's so much more we can talk about on that issue, and I'd like to come back to that. Let's go to Tennessee, and we're going to talk to Loretta. Loretta, nice to have you with us today.
Yes, good afternoon. I've got a question. I've been talking with a lady. She's a nice Christian lady, and she has a daughter who, brilliant girl, physics major in college, scored in the top 3% on the MCAT, and as it turned out, she was diagnosed with schizophrenia. When the diagnosis came, she was living with her father, who has since passed, and now she's living with the mother. And it's creating a problem because, of course, the daughter doesn't have any problem, according to her. And they don't have a diagnosis that will allow her to get on Social Security. The mother at present has cancer, and they are trying to find the best way to deal with the daughter. The daughter doesn't communicate much. She'll write notes. And I think there may be some fear involved there with the mother. And my question is around how do you advise or help someone that might be in this situation cope with the mental illness of the daughter as well as try to get the daughter to get out on her own?
Good question, Loretta. Dr. Jennings?
Well, schizophrenia has actually several different forms. And the way you're describing this young lady, and I'm speaking totally hypothetically because I obviously haven't seen or met her, but the way you describe sounds like someone who has paranoid schizophrenia, as she is fearful, she is withdrawn, she is not interacting, she's afraid
Very
of her mother,
much.
She's writing notes. And what happens is that the ability to perceive accurately the environment around them is altered due to an alteration in certain aspects of the brain that ascribes salience or relevance to things, and then the processing parts that interpret the salience or relevance of what's going on around them. So what happens is, in a patient like this, they lose touch with reality and they misperceive innocuous events as being something significant that is not. And because it's not significant, there's no reality base for it, they begin attaching irrational attachments or beliefs to these things and they become delusional. this person needs to see a mental health professional, needs to get on medication, and medication does not take away delusions. What medication does is it helps fix the parts of the brain or helps the brain function better so she can appreciate reality herself. And when she appreciates reality herself and stops misperceiving, then the delusions will remit as she sees more clearly what's going on around her. But without medications, patients like this can become quite dangerous because they can perceive danger where there is no danger, and they can act out in a self-defensive way to harm others because they perceive someone's out to harm them.
Are you sure you've never met her? Because you've described it almost very accurately.
Well, I would take her to a community mental health clinic if no one else, if she has no resources. They're available in most states, and they get her on some medication. And then, of course, if she doesn't respond and continues to have these persistent symptoms, then she should apply for Social Security disability and would probably end up on some type of assistance for her care in the future.
But she won't go.
Yeah, then if she's that disabled, then you need to have her evaluated for an involuntary commitment, where they can a judge will determine that she is not competent to make decisions for herself because she's that out of touch with reality, and that would be based on an individual case.
And that's called involuntary
commitment.
Commitment. Okay, thank you.
All right, Loretta, thanks so much for calling, and God bless. When we get back, we are going to Michigan. We're going to talk to Candace. There's a lot more to come, but we only have, not too much time left in the program. If you'd like to give us a call, do it soon, 800-775-4673. We will be back in just a minute as we continue this discussion about mental health.
You can join the conversation now by calling 800-775-4673.
The effects of the 2005 hurricane season continue to be felt. And this is Jeremy Woodruff, and not long ago I was talking with a friend who had spent some time in Mississippi helping with the cleanup effort along the Gulf Coast. He said that a large percentage of the houses have been so heavily damaged they couldn't even be repaired. Whole towns are being completely rebuilt. And while our hearts go out to those whose lives have been turned upside down, it occurred to me that spiritually speaking, that may not be a bad place to be. If the storms of life have eroded the foundations of your belief structure, God can help you start over again, building on the solid ground of His Word. If you'd like a tool to help you in a spiritual reconstruction, I offer you the Discover Bible Lessons, a set of free Bible studies that are delivered right to your mailbox. Just call 800-775-4673 to begin building your life on the rock, Jesus Christ our Savior. Ask for Discover when you call 800-775-HOPE.
Steve Gallimore, we are talking today about mental health. We are talking about Christians. How do we relate to this? I'm in the studio today with my guest, Dr. Tim Jennings, psychiatrist, and he is someone that is so capable of helping us with the topic today. If you have a question, call quickly because we are running out of time. 800-775-4673. We're going to Michigan now, and we're talking to Candace. Candace, nice to have you with us.
Well, I've been diagnosed with clinical depression. I'm on antidepressants and some other medicine. And I read Dr. Neil Nedley's book on depression. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yes, I am. I've read it.
But my doctor okayed me taking two of the supplements he recommended. And I was hoping to get off the regular antidepressants, the traditional medicine, but they said that's not a good thing in my case. I don't know, because people have told me I shouldn't have to take medicine. Christians have told me that for my condition, that I should just be able to trust in God and cope with it.
Candace, we made reference to that earlier as well, because there are many Christians that say that. Dr. Jennings, what would your response be?
My response would be that the people who say that mean well but are speaking without knowledge. And the disease or the illness of depression has several causes. And if your doctors have evaluated you and told you that they advise you not to come off medications, they're doing that because they judge in your particular case that the underpinnings of your depression are not going to be resolved with simple nutritional supplementation. Mm-hmm. Some people's depression have a strong genetic base to them, and if one comes off a medication, then the likelihood of relapse is very high. If you've had more than two episodes of major depression in your life, this data shows that if you come off a medication, the likelihood of a relapse is around 80%. And I think your doctors understand that when, and you from your own experience understand that when you're in a depression, it is quite debilitating. And it would be better to avoid going into one than to treat somebody who's in one. So I think I would have to follow the advice of your doctors and tell you that you know, certainly nothing wrong with being nutritionally sound-minded, but the nutritional aspects alone are probably not going to be effective for resolving, you know, your particular depression.
Okay. One thing I did, my doctors did recommend, because I don't have any family and I live alone, was to get a pet. And that really helped me because I had someone to be responsible for besides myself, and I have to take care of it because the pet can't get their own food and stuff.
Now, did you get a pet, Candace?
Yes, I do. I have a cat.
You have a cat, okay.
And that's the
and
aspect
really
of the...
It really helped me having someone around, you know, to take care of. And I have to take care of them.
And Candace, that's the aspect of the love that we're talking about, the other-centeredness. You have someone to give to now, and when you give, see, that it's healthy for the heart and mind. And so I'm glad you've got that pet, and we wish you well.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Candace. Thanks for calling. God bless.
Bye.
Let's come, if we could, Tim, back to the issue of origins. We were talking about that back before the last break. And when we look at the process of sin in the world, we can see there's kind of a breakdown of everything. It has led me to this, probably from a professional standpoint, as a psychiatrist, possibly from you, not from me, but maybe something that is not sound thinking. But let me pass this by you. It seems to me that sin itself is a form of mental illness. Now, you gave certain categories of mental illness, and I don't mean to force everything into that one category. But when Cain slew his brother Abel, that was an unnatural event. It was a choice, without question. But he made that choice. But how it seems to me that maybe Satan himself is insane, because sin makes no sense whatsoever to a rational person.
Correct. Yeah, no, some people even use the words that sin are a species of insanity. It's certainly not one that's in the DSM-4 Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Mental Illnesses.
Right.
But I understand what you're meaning. It goes against what's healthy, what's reasonable, what's logical, what's loving, what's appropriate, and it results in damage, devastation, and destruction. It makes no sense whatever. So in that sense, sure, of course, why would you want to do it? But people do it anyway.
Right. Well, let's go to Oregon now, and we're going to talk to Patty. Patty, nice to have you with us today.
Thank you very much. I have a question. I think that my daughter suffered with postpartum with her last baby, and we reconnected after she spent a year of you know, just telling me to stay away and talking to the family about different things that are their issues, and I think they were hers. But anyway, her little boy is 3 years old now, but she's gone back to being real irrational about what she says, yelling if somebody goes to have lunch with her son, and just everything she talks about. She's thrown away all of her friends and thrown away everybody. Can that postpartum, can that continue on? Or is it just maybe just another kind of a mental illness?
I think about 75% of women have postpartum blues, which are a normal response to the afterbirth aftermath of birth, which lasts for a few days or so.
It lasted her for a year.
Okay, that's the postpartum blues. Then there's another disorder that's more serious, called like 2% maybe of women get postpartum depression, and then there's something even more serious called postpartum psychosis. Now, if the postpartum depression, and unless the onset must occur within a month of the postpartum period, is never treated, then certainly it could persist for quite some time without resolution. So, it's certainly a possibility. It's usually unusual for it to go on for 3 years, but if it started then and it hasn't remitted since then certainly she needs to be evaluated in consultation for treatment.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you, Patty.
Goodbye.
Yes, thanks for calling. Tim, we don't have a lot of time left in the program today. What are some loose ends that we should tie up before we come to the end?
Well, I think the loose end I would like to tie up is to help people know that if they are struggling with some mental illness in their life, that it is appropriate for them to seek treatment. Now, that's coming from a psychiatrist. How about from a pastor?
Well, absolutely. Tim, there is no question that if someone is suffering from mental illness, and that can have various forms, as we've already talked about today, some serious, not so serious, obviously. But the first place that many people go is to their pastor. And, you know, I'm a lifelong pastor. People come to me. But I think one of the best skills that a pastor can have is to realize when they need to refer someone to get additional help. A pastor doesn't know everything, and we're kind of general practitioners. But, there, you know, a pastor, if someone came to me as a pastor, and it seemed obvious to me that they had a broken finger, I would send them to an orthopedic surgeon and say, you know, I really can't help you with that. I can evaluate from what I see. You have a broken finger, but you need to get some help. In the same way with mental illness, I think God made us. We realize the process of sin. We're somewhat broken down. And sometimes people need a physician. And Jesus, of course, recognizes kind of healing. Jesus did a lot of healing, both physical and mental and emotional and spiritual.
And absolutely.
And as we participate in his ministry, we participate, I think, in all those areas. Well, we would love to continue this discussion, but we are out of time. And Dr. Jennings, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you.
This has been a great discussion. I have enjoyed it. We trust that you have enjoyed it too. Look forward to being back with you on Monday. We'll have another great week next week. In the meantime, God bless.